And obviously, different observers will differ in what they have to observe to give this kind of description. But even though they differ in what they have to observe in order to give it, the message is the same. Namely, you can expect more of this from this guy than you would expect just from any one person. Yeah, except I tend to be possibly overly sensitive to statements that sound like probability statements, and that sounds like one. It's safer and very often more valid to talk about expectation. And I think, in fact, that's what I did say. I said you can expect more from this guy than from just anybody. Now, saying that you can expect more doesn't imply that I've counted any cases. It doesn't imply that I've computed a probability. And in normal conversation, that sort of talk is interchangeable with saying he's more likely to. But if we're being twitchy about it, saying likely suggests counting cases. I don't want to suggest that. So given that qualification, yeah, that's what you're saying. You're pointing toward the future. You're saying here's what you could expect from him. You're doing more than that. In fact, let me direct your attention to one of the paragraphs here. It's paragraph 10C. I'm not sure why it's that far down the line, but there it is. Now, 10C tells you, in general, what the point is of giving a description like this. And what I mentioned was the first of these four. Namely, you're implying something about what you could expect from this person. But there's also you're implying how you might deal with them effectively. Because you don't, what it takes to deal effectively with a hostile person is not the same as what it takes to deal effectively with a friendly person. So in saying he's a hostile person, you're also getting at some of this, what it would take to deal with him effectively. Somewhat independently from what it would take to deal with him effectively, there is also the issue of how it's appropriate to deal with a hostile person as against a friendly one, as against an indifferent one, etc. So you've got implications about how it's appropriate to deal with it. And finally, it's sort of a mirror image of one, namely, what kind of allowances you have to make. Since you can't expect the same thing from a hostile person that you can expect from anybody, there are going to be times where, if you didn't know that, you'd be surprised because he wouldn't do some of the things that you would normally expect. But if you know he's hostile, you've made the allowances for his being hostile, and then he doesn't surprise you as much. You make the allowances when you say, how do I have to deal with him effectively? So it's adjusting your total picture in terms of the information that's implied or communicated when you say, here's a hostile person. It has these various kinds of implications. As I say, these are the point of getting a description of that sort, either for your own benefit or for somebody else's, that they have these implications.
When you're saying you expect this kind of behavior, you mean not unless you say more. If you simply say he's a hostile person, you're saying you can expect more from him than just from anybody. No, no, you're not saying that he couldn't be these ways. You're just saying that he's going to be more this way than other people. Okay. So you can see that this is a fairly crude sort of description. It's based on a crude categorization of a frequency pattern. But it is the kind of information that we look for and use. And descriptions of this point, of this sort, can be very important to us. Now, the next form is an attitude description. An attitude description is the same as a trait description, except that something is implied about K. The reason is that an attitude is always an attitude towards something. And so to give an attitude, you specify the type of behavior, but you also specify the attitude object. You specify some value of K. And so, for example, you might say, well, he's not a hostile person, but he sure is hostile toward him. And in that case, you would not be implying that in general you can expect more hostile behavior. You are implying that when he's dealing with him, you can expect more hostile behavior. So now what you've got is a more refined distinction that says when the behavior has a certain K value, that is when he's dealing with this person he doesn't like, then you'll see a high frequency of hostile behavior. So that's pinpointing it a little more, and that gives us a different kind of description, and that's an attitude description. Now, clearly, people show this kind of difference. People can be hostile to some person or to some group of people or some class of people and not to others. And because of this, we would often find ourselves very wide of the mark if we had to depend only on overall trait description. So you use attitude descriptions when it's not an overall thing, but has some restriction on it. The third type of notion is the notion of an interest. Common examples are when, you know, I could be said to have an interest in chess, or an interest in art, or an interest in football, an interest in esoteric art objects. Various sorts of interest are possible. Like an attitude, an interest is always an interest in something or other. And so there is a specification of K. Secondly, there is a frequency limitation. See, if I claim to have an interest in chess, but you never saw me playing chess or reading chess magazines or doing anything connected with chess, you would have some basis for doubting me. So the description without qualification implies some kind of frequency. And what is further implied by the frequency is priority. And the connection is that you always have more than one opportunity. And so what you visibly do represents a choice over the other options that you had and turned down. Consequently, if something is not high on your priority list, you may never do it, because you have always other choices of other things that are more important. Well, if something is so unimportant that the frequency is low, then you say that's not a real interest. So the notion of interest carries some notion of motivational priority to go along with the frequency. See, in contrast, if a person is a hostile person, that kind of frequency doesn't carry motivational priority. You don't say the person is motivated to be hostile. He simply is. But here, you say, yeah, the person is motivated to play chess if he has an interest in chess. And then thirdly, the behavior in question has to be intrinsic behavior. Recall that intrinsic behavior is behavior that can be understood as being engaged in without a further end in view. The reason you have intrinsic behaviors is that you have intrinsic social practices. There are social practices that can be understood as being engaged in without a further end in view. Why is this important? Because if there is a further end, if there is an ulterior motive, then you say it isn't a real interest. If I play chess, if I do some of the things that look like I'm interested in chess, but I'm really doing it only to establish my position as an intellectual, say, then you say, he doesn't have a real interest in chess. So long as I'm only doing it for some other reason, you don't count that as an interest. So to count as an interest, the behavior that expresses it has got to be intrinsic behavior. I have to be doing it for no other end than simply playing chess.
You would have to have some other kind of the description would show up in the same way. In other words, this is what he does when he has the opportunity. As to why, then you would have to carry it on some other way. You have to get at that in some other way.
Why what?
As to why he's playing chess.
It's high on his priority list.
Or as to what his interest was as well.
Well,
You
say, why is he playing chess? The answer might be he has an interest in chess. And that's to say that his playing chess expresses his interest.
That's all the further you could go with it. It's just say he has an interest in chess. You wouldn't say why.
Well, that is why.
But, I mean, there might be two causes for that. Right? There's a possibility, i.e., you know, intellectual, you know, promotes this, you know, intellectual image, or he enjoys playing chess.
This parameter of intentional action is what we're looking at now. Saying that he's playing chess because he has an interest in chess, you would specify here interest. Saying that he's hostile and that he's being hostile reflects the fact that he's a hostile person, you would specify here trait. Trait of hostility. Now, if I have an ulterior motive, if I'm doing it to establish myself as an intellectual, that's not an ID characteristic, that's the significance of my behavior, that I am doing this by playing chess.
Is enjoyment an acceptable value as?
Not purely and simply, but if you said, well, he's doing it because he enjoys it, that would be to say he does it without a further interview. And then if you didn't say anything else, probably it would be taken to be an interest. If not, then you'd plug it in here and saying what he's up to is getting himself some enjoyment, and here's how he's doing it. So you just saying he's doing it because he enjoys it would not distinguish those two cases.
And so when you're talking about something like an interest, that there's no further reasons, so that you wouldn't talk about the reason for the interest in terms of, you know, the four.
No, you wouldn't talk about the reason for the interest. The most you could look for is a historical explanation of how come he has this interest when other people don't. How come he has this interest in chess? And you would look back to his history to explain that. But that's not the reason.
Keep going back to the example of reason hostility. Does the amplitude have anything to do with the theory? For example, someone could give someone dirty looks, and then you consider that being hostile. And they might do that 20 times or 30 times, and then someone else might punch somebody on two occasions, and then the just the manifestation of hostility and the amplitude of it being when you punch somebody, it's probably considered more hostile, but the frequency is much less in the behavior.
Mm-hmm.
I was wondering how the theory accounts for.
Well, earlier, instead of frequency, I had appropriateness, and frequency was a special case. And to make it neat, I put it all in terms of frequency. But clearly, overreacting with too much hostility is grounds for saying, here's a person who is a hostile person. But what happens is, if somebody overreacts, you are going to find him expressing hostility sometimes when most people wouldn't. So as a logical condition, it seemed that you could get it just by talking about frequency, even though observationally, often you would go by even a single instance of gross overreaction. But that's why I was talking about language that suggests that you've counted cases, that you don't arrive at these descriptions generally by counting, even though that's what's suggested here. You don't generally have a person's life history available to inspect and count. So what's going on when you give these does not usually imply, nor is it based on counting. That's why it's couched in terms of expectation. And these are really forward-looking rather than backward-looking. Here's what you can expect. Here's how it's appropriate.
The question is, this is important, but you understand, isn't the doubling parameter more important than interest, or highlighted from interest, in contrast to, say, attitude? Because by implication, you said before, the doubling parameter involves the K parameter, and a person may be hostile, but not really want to be hostile, but is.
Yeah, but if this is hostile behavior, that W is a hostile W. And it's not that he wants it to be hostile, it's that what he wants is a hostile one. See, if I want to hurt him, the value here is for him to be hurt. And it's not that I want to be hostile, it's that the fact that I want him to be hurt is hostility. It is a hostile other. You know, one of the things that's missing here is that there isn't a single type of behavior. See, here I said any type, here I said any type with a specification of K. Here, it's not just any type, it's specification of K. The reason is that you do not show your interest with a single kind of behavior. If I have an interest in chess, the most obvious way of showing it is to play chess. There's all kinds of other ways of showing it too, and all of them are genuine ways of showing an interest in chess. For example, I could join the chess club, or I could contribute to the chess club. I could study chess books. I could solve the problems in the Sunday paper. Every Sunday they have a chess problem. I could talk to people about chess. I could read biographies of famous chess players. I could tune in when they're televising Spassky and Fischer. So if you saw somebody doing, you know, a fair amount of all of these things, you say, boy, there's a chestnut. So some fair number of these things with some fair degree of priority is normally what you would observe as a basis for saying he has an interest in chess. So it doesn't amount to a single type of behavior like hostile behavior. It's any behavior that has chess as its object and is intrinsic. You can see that that's quite a different specification. These two have a strong resemblance, and it's a very simple thing. This is a little more complicated. It still connects to expectations. If you say he has an interest in chess, you can expect that when he has an opportunity, he will express his interest. And because of the priority, that he won't need as good an opportunity as most people would in order to choose it. He'll go out of his way to do some of these things, you might say. Now, the notion of interest is the, what you might call the neutral notion. There is a related notion that is of clinical interest. That's the notion of a preoccupation. And that's very close to the Jungian notion of a complex. Now, the difference between an interest and a preoccupation is that the latter carries a pejorative appraisal. If I say that he's preoccupied with chess, I'm saying he's too much wrapped up in it. Whereas if I say he has an interest in chess, I just say he's wrapped up in it. So the appraisal that goes with preoccupation says he's overdoing it, he's doing too much of something. Whereas saying interest simply says he's doing a lot of it, or he's doing more than most. So the one implies that there's something wrong with what he's doing, and the other does not. And it's because the one implies that there's something wrong with what he's doing that that's the one that has the clinical interest. Because as clinicians, you don't worry about people's interest in chess, etc. You only worry about it when there's something wrong with their having that much of an interest. When that interest is preventing them from doing other things, or it's limiting them and creating a pathological state. So you might say the clinical form of the notion of interest is preoccupation.
When you talk about it having to be intrinsic, is that required from the behavior's angle or from the observer's?
Neither. If I say that's a table there, I'm not saying it's a table from my viewpoint or from yours. I'm saying it's a table. If I say he has an interest, I'm not saying I think he has an interest. And I'm not saying you ought to think he has. I'm saying he has. And that's a very different thing to say. Now, obviously, I could be wrong. And that's why people are generally careful when they make flat statements. But the fact that I could be wrong doesn't mean that I'm saying anything other than just the bare fact he has that interest. Okay, let's go to another one. Where? Here you have a specification not of K but of P.
Yes.
You have a type of behavior identified by reference to the performance. And the pattern is stronger than frequency. It's more like uniformity. He does this all the time. And the general characteristic of this kind of description is it's a style characterization. Examples of styles are awkward, active, clumsy, vivacious, energetic, or such things as Southern dialect, a Southern accent. The accent with which you speak is a performance characteristic. You know, you all speak English, but well, sometimes you speak with a Southern accent, sometimes with an Oklahoma accent, sometimes with a New York accent. The differences are not differences in your behavior. You're speaking English and you're saying things. The differences are in your performance. So things like accents fall under the heading of style. And characteristics like energetic or an accent is something which characterizes all or most of your behavior. If you have a Southern accent, you don't talk with a Southern accent most of the time. You talk with a Southern accent all the time, with rare exceptions. If you're an energetic person, you're not energetic just more than most. You're, in general, just overall more energetic. So it's a strong frequency pattern and a performance characterization.
If the frequency is not there, and you say you did that well, are you maybe something specific?
Simply specifying his achievement, but you're not giving a style description.
It's more of an achievement, it's a qualitative judgment of that achievement. So what will that call?
Would still be an achievement description. See, if you said he did that awkwardly, rather than he's an awkward person and that's why he did it the way he did, saying he did it awkwardly is giving an achievement description. That's what he succeeded in doing. That's what he accomplished, is doing it awkward. You could give it as a performance description. His performance there was awkward. Either one would do the job.
Well, he supposedly achievement and performance parameters can have qualities for those quantitative aspects. I was under the assumption
that
performance and achievement are quantitative.
No. I said that in general, none of the parameters of behavior are quantitative. Occasionally, you can introduce some quantification, but in general, no. In saying that you specify values of P with process descriptions and values of A with state of affairs or event descriptions, again, there's no implication that those processes or those states of affairs will be quantitative. They may be, but there's no general implication. It may be the example that threw you off. I used an IQ score as an achievement, as an example of an achievement, and that is quantitative.
I was thinking more in terms of what the performance was. I was making the distinction between the same performance was he fell on his face and the qualitative way of saying
it. That is qualitative. Saying he fell on his face is certainly not quantitative.
Okay.
Huh? Now, one of the primary uses of style descriptions is to deny motivation. You can have a hostile style without behaving, without engaging in hostile behavior. So very often you hear statements like, oh, don't be bothered, he doesn't really mean it, that's just his style. And that's exploiting the fact that with a style description, you are specifying only in terms of P, and saying nothing about the motivation. So to say that that's only his style is to say he doesn't mean it that way. He isn't really being hostile. Okay, now these four notions of trait, attitude, interest, and style are categorized in your outline under the heading of dispositions. Dispositions is a term taken from the traditional literature, and it has to do with what you might expect. So when you say a person has a disposition to do something, you're talking about what you might expect him to do. So dispositions are tied to expectations. To put it differently, if a person has a given disposition, he'll show it given the opportunity unless something prevents it. And it's because of this feature that given the occasion, it'll show itself unless something prevents it, that it connects to what you might expect him to do. Because if a person has a general disposition, you wouldn't expect that routinely something else would happen to prevent it. You would expect that it would show up in actual behavior, even though it doesn't have to. And the standard example of it doesn't have to is consider a person who's a hostile person but is a diplomat. You say, gee, you never see him behave in a hostile way. And the reason why is quite clear. He routinely has a stronger reason to behave in a different way. Yeah, that doesn't keep him from being a hostile person. And the usual test of it is take him out of the situation to give him the stronger reasons and then watch him. But if you were just watching him in his life situation, his frequency count would be low. So again, the frequency count is a conceptual frequency count, not an actual inspection of anybody's life history. Conceptually, it's what he would be doing if he did what he was inclined to do and nothing kept him from it. Then the frequency corresponds to what he's like as a person. But in fact, those conditions are seldom met, because routinely you have various other competing reasons. So you can summarize that by saying people do not always show themselves to be the kind of people they are. Then the frequency corresponds to what he's like as a person. But in fact, those conditions are seldom met, because routinely you have various other competing reasons. So you can summarize that by saying people do not always show themselves to be the kind of people they are.
That is to say, if somebody is very rarely hostile and he never comes out of being a diplomat, how can you say he's a hostile person?
Well, how would you answer that? How would you answer that? Certainly you can conceive of it as a possibility, can't you? Well, if you had a person like that, how would you go about unmasking him?
You would have occurrences.
Would you need to have?
That is something that would point toward it.
Yeah.
Otherwise, what do you say?
Sure. what could you observe that would take your description out of the realm of fancy and into the realm of something that's backed up by fact? Well, there's several kinds of things. One is, if you have a person who is hostile and has that kind of motivation going but doesn't behave that way, very often he'll do it at a cost. And you can see the effort that he's making to keep his temper. You can see abortive hostility being aborted. You know, you can see the preliminaries in them being shut off. You can also go to the put him in a different situation, and there he'll show his true colors. Now, some combination of these two. For example, you say, yeah, but when he was back home with his family, boy, was he a son of a bitch. Okay. Well, some combination of when he's in other circumstances, he shows it. And in this circumstance, or in this setting where he doesn't show it, you can see signs of effort. Or if not signs of effort, you can see occasionally he does poorly. And your explanation is that's because he's devoting so much energy to controlling his temper that he's doing a bad job, or he's not doing as well as usual. So some combination of those things would give you a case. And the classic phrase is, now he's showing his true colors. And that reflects a traditional recognition that people do not always show themselves as the kind of people they are, but that there is some basis for deciding that it isn't something we just make up.
Well, that would kind of be an example where one would normally be angry when this fellow wasn't. In that case, it's an absence of something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that would be part of the effort. If this guy doesn't bat an eyelash in circumstances where anybody would get up there and yell, say, that's not accidental, he's controlling it. And that would be part of your line of evidence. The other would be to have available an explanation of what reason he had for not showing it when he was angry. And that's why diplomat is a good example, because it's quite clear the kind of reason he had.
I was just thinking of the significance parameter. He could be angry and yet showed it in another way, doing an expletive in one type
form. Well, that would be then hostile behavior.
These conditions critical to understand disposition. Someone by the definition was saying tell us what a person is likely to do. But as you were alluding to just that.
Now remember, there's four things there. What's to be expected of A, how it's appropriate to treat him, how you can do it effectively, what allowances to make. It's not just expectation. What I said was that dispositions connect to expectation. Let me anticipate something and give you an example of why I said that would be hostile behavior. Suppose I tell you that last Friday, I left here at 7 o'clock, got home at 7:30, and we had dinner at 8:30, and it was steak and it was well done. And you hear all of that, you nod and you say, so what else is new? Half of Boulder does that. Now, suppose I add some information and I say, last Friday morning, I had a big argument with my wife and we never got it settled. I say, I usually get home at 7 or 7:30, but we usually have dinner at 8. And I like steak, but I like it rare and I hate it well done. And at that point, you have a very different picture of what was going on there. And you say, aha, she was really giving you the shaft, wasn't she? Now, the interesting part of that is that that comes across very clearly from these background facts. And if you had been there watching, you needn't have seen anything that looked at all like hostility. There needn't have been anything in her performance that would suggest hostility. If you had been there, you would have seen two people having dinner. Why? Because she didn't need to grit her teeth or yell or hit me over the head, etc., to express hostility, to engage in hostile behavior. All she had to do was choose to have dinner that way rather than some other way, and that did the job. But what we would say is she was engaging in hostile behavior by serving dinner that way.
And I was just thinking that a lot of people may not recognize that as hostile behavior, but still, you know, that would be what was occurring.
Yeah, part of the point of this clinically is that very often people have the notion that as a clinician you have to have good eyesight, that you have to pay very, very careful attention to tones of voice and postures and things like that, and that that's where it's at. I won't deny that it's important to be able to do these, but I give you this example where nothing of that sort would have to suggest hostility. And yet the background facts that I presented, I think, make it quite clear that hostility was the nature of that behavior. Then I would suggest that clinically that's the kind of observation that is much more important than having good eyesight or a sharp ear.
In normal clinical language, that's called passive aggressive stuff. That would be what might be.
That would qualify. See, one of the features, since there's no performative aspect that looks hostile, you have a hard time pinning it on her. If I turn around and say, "What are you being so hostile for?" she could easily say, "What do you mean hostile? We're just having dinner." Okay. And that's the mark of a good passive aggressive move. Namely, who, me? So it's because it doesn't have the performative aspect, and there is available a perfectly good and correct description of what she's doing, that she can offer that as an alternative to the description that she's being hostile. And the reason she can is that it's true. We are having dinner. So if she says that's all that's happening, she's in a pretty safe position, because she doesn't ever have to admit that there's more than that happening. Why? Because in general, there doesn't have to be any more than that happening. When people are having dinner, they don't have to be doing anything other than having dinner. So it's pretty hard on those occasions when there is more going on to show conclusively in the face of a denial that there's more going on. That's one of the problems you have with clients in psychotherapy. Very often you see it and you'd like them to see it, but you have a hard time getting it across. Well, they could, except here again, if I hadn't given them to you in just that form, how would you have picked them out? Say you'd been following me around unobserved and invisible for the last 3 days. How would you have picked out those facts as the relevant facts, the relevant context? After all, my entire life history is context for any of my behavior. How would you pick out the relevant context? See, you'd have to be looking for something like this in order to pick them out. You'd have to know that there was such a pattern in order to recognize that these facts together with this fit. Then you can pick up.
That's actually the sign of the mission, that those facts can be brought out.
Yeah.
Subtle kind of behavior, and you're trying to get the idea across to them to know what they're doing.
It usually isn't subtle.
Well, yeah.
Because if it was really subtle, you wouldn't pick it up either. Usually it's obvious, but only obvious to most people, but not to them.
Yeah, is it that they don't recognize it, or is it that they do recognize it and don't want to deal with it, or both?
Either way. Usually they don't recognize it, and they're not recognizing it is not excellent. But it's not the kind where you can just remind them that there it is, and they'll say, "Oh yes."
And of course, you would have to take a different method of getting it across to them, other than just telling it adds up, because they wouldn't get that concept anyway.
They might get the concept, but they would deny it applied. That's what I was saying last time, that if you, you give activity descriptions that don't imply motivation, you're less likely to get that kind of resistance. And that's one device for helping people to see things that they're not already seeing.
If you give the activity description,
yeah.
In other words, activity, I'm thinking of achievement.
No, activity, you delete the W. So in effect, you're not implying that they're doing it on purpose.
But if you give the activity description, then you're just telling what they have in there. And when do you get to the good stuff?
Well, look, that's not where you give the activity description, because that she'll admit. Where you give the activity description and say, hey, you were really giving him the shaft, or you were really putting him down. She says, me? And you say, yeah, didn't you notice? You were giving him something he didn't like. You were giving it to him half an hour late. What would you call that if not putting him down? And then she could say, but I didn't mean it that way. It just worked out that way.
And
you say, but that was still a put down. I know you, I'll accept that you didn't mean it, but by God, look at the effect. Yeah. So in effect, you're giving it to her and insisting on it under either a performance or activity description. And the point is, don't be surprised if you get a reaction to it that way, because look, that's the way it looks. So don't expect people just not to react to it just because you didn't mean it. And it's because of that, as I said, that even if you accept the I didn't mean it, the person has a much harder time doing it next time and saying, but I didn't mean it. And so they don't ever have to admit it. Okay, as I said, these four are a certain kind of personal characteristic, and they're called dispositions. And dispositions connect to frequency and expectation. Now, I will say generally that all of these notions that we're developing now include the ones that traditionally have been studied under the heading of personality variables. See, when people have studied personality variables, they study individual differences. And in line of studying individual differences, they study traits, they studied attitudes, they studied interests, they studied values, which we'll get to. They've studied abilities, even though when they're studying abilities, they don't usually think of themselves as studying personality, but that too will be included. And they've studied expressive behavior, which fits pretty closely the notion of style. So we're dealing with what, in a certain tradition, would be the heart of personality theory. And more specifically, it's the psychometric tradition that we're thinking of. The people who have tried to measure traits, attitudes, interests. Or rather, the people who have tried to measure personality variables are the ones who have studied traits, attitudes, interests, abilities, styles, values. So the measurement approaches have gone heavily on trying to quantify the degree to which a person is hostile, the degree to which he has this or that value, the degree to which he has this or that ability, etc. Okay, let's continue with the personal characteristics next slide.